I'm doing this show under protest. It's the news, according to me. Good Friday morning. Surprise, surprise. Here I am doing a show from the home studio. I was not expecting to be doing a show this morning from the home studio. I thought I was going to do a show tonight or last night and have it posted this morning. That did not happen. I have, it's Friday, April 26th, 8:21 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. And it's just flipping over to 8:22 right now. The weather outside is frightful. We have 37 degrees I woke up to this morning. I'm not sure what it is exactly at this moment. It's like 39 degrees. It's risen 2 degrees here in the last couple minutes. Expected to go up a few more degrees probably by the end of the day. I think the high today is supposed to be up in the 60s or something. It's supposed to be sunny. And chance of some rain tonight. No, there you go. There's your forecast for the day here where I am. Has nothing to do with where you are. Probably. I don't know. Maybe everything to do with where, I don't know where you are. I know where some of you are because I see the statistics here. Let's go. We haven't gone over statistics. You know, a guy used to say statistics. He couldn't say statistics, so he would say statistics. It's always interesting to hear him talk. Oh, yeah, we got the map. The worldwide map is lit up all over the place. Got Brazil, Venezuela, Colombia, Peru, Argentina, Chile. Argentina, what's it doing down there? And we have Australia. Australia. The Aussies are finally getting on board now with this show, I guess. There's a few. There's even New Zealand. It's got a couple over there. Look at there. South Africa, Tanzania, Nigeria. Which I would expect. I've got some friends in Nigeria. It's Sudan, Saudi Arabia. That surprises me. India, Pakistan, Iran. That does not surprise me. Iraq. Really? No, there's none in Iraq. I'm sorry. Turkey. No, it's just Turkey. I see they pronounce it. They spelled it wrong. Romania and Spain, Portugal, France, of course. Yeah, United Kingdom. Iceland, surprisingly enough, Norway, Sweden, Finland, Russia. Now, this is interesting. Very low numbers in Russia, considering how large of a country that is. By the way, that is a very large country. It is, the geographical Russia is actually geographically as larger than the United States territories, the territory, even including Alaska and Hawaii. We have some of these others down here. Korea. South Korea. There's South Korea. Japan. And I think that's it. I believe that is it. Oh, did I see Indonesia? Malaysia? Is that right there? Yeah, Indonesia. It's all the way down through there. What? Vietnam. Okay, I was going to say Cambodia. I wouldn't think anybody. Okay, there we go. Okay. There you have it. There's some of the places around the world that people are listening to this show. And of course, the United States. There's, boy, by far, the numbers are ridiculous in the United States. So that's really disproportionate. I think there needs to be more parity here between the countries. What was this one here? I said that. Yeah, okay. I didn't get that. So I have a few things to talk about today. I'm going to try to be a little bit more lighthearted in my show. I've noticed that it's very easy to slip into this idea that it's just kind of gloomy and difficult out there because the reason being is because it's dark and gloomy out there. That's kind of the tough part of this whole thing is that makes it a little bit tougher when we realize that it's dark and gloomy. So I'm going to try to spruce up, as you say, the show. And I'm not doing that right now as I'm saying this. But I do have some things I'd like to work on as far as bringing a little bit better, a little bit more of a, well, how do you do it? It's difficult to do. There's a guy by the name of Decoy Voice, I think it is. Is it Decoy Voice? I think it's Decoy Voice. he is on YouTube, of course, and he has this. Let's see if I can find his channel. Yeah, Decoy Voice. There it is. It is Decoy Voice. Okay. Yeah, he tries to keep things lighthearted, mostly just by playing lighthearted music behind the scenes. That's kind of what it is. I was just noticing this. One of the things, one of his top, I think it's most recent video is the Alec Baldwin debacle that happened in a restaurant. Apparently, Alec Baldwin was in a, I don't know what it was, some kind of a coffee shop of some kind. And he gets approached by this lunatic leftist wacko, which is, are people that they've developed, they've designed. These are the people that they cater to with all their philosophies. The Trump derangement syndrome, typical white elitists that think that they're above it, but they're going to declare their non-racism by being vehemently opposed to Donald Trump because he's a racist, and they're going to show their love for humanity by hating people. And the more outspoken you are about that hatred towards in certain individuals, that shows that, you know, and then when those individuals confront you in a coffee shop, you ask the owner to call the police. That's kind of an interesting little, I'm not going to play anything from that. It's funny enough the way it is, but the, I do have a few things I'd like to talk about today. A couple of videos that I've taken, one of them is this whole thing about demonstrations. The protests are going on right now. They're in the news. They're becoming quite a big deal. I wasn't going to talk about them at all, just because I hate even giving this stuff any kind of credibility. But if I'm going to give them any kind of platform at all, I'm going to make it obviously big. I'm just going to go all in here with this, just to kind of prove my point as to why I don't typically give them a platform. Because they're psychos. And they've got, these people have mental illness. Look, I get it. We've got these young people who are looking for a reason to be alive, a reason for their lives to make a difference and to have a purpose for their existence. And unfortunately, the church has dropped the ball in this regard, largely because of its irrelevance in its message. Its message it's no longer about the gospel anymore. They've gotten involved in social issues, feel-good messages about how you can feel good about yourself and get through your week and come back next week to give you to help support this little show that gives you that little inspiration for the week. It's very little to do with discipline, self-discipline, commitment when it hurts. Matt Redman is a worship leader that I truly, wholeheartedly respect. I really have a lot of respect for that man. He's been through a lot in his life, and he's very open about that. He doesn't just wear it on his sleeve, but he will. There's plenty of things out there where he talks about the tough things he's been through in life. I'm just finding out things that he's talked about that I'm just amazed. Some of the stuff that he's gone through. And even in his marriage, they've lost children. There's just different things that have happened throughout his life. And it's just, and this guy is rock solid in his, I mean, he has always turned back to God in the midst of his troubles. And that's all you can ask for. Now, I'm sure he has plenty of things that he's struggles with personally that, you know, he's not a perfect individual. But his faith is real. He's not just an entertainer. And I'm sad to say, there are a lot of Christian music artists out there who are entertainers. We're trying to make it in the Christian music industry because it's a little easier. And then they many times branch off into the secular world. Lauren Daigle is doing this. Now, I'm not going to sit here and judge where she's at with her faith. All I can say is she's more of an entertainer than a worship leader, even though some of her songs are they're powerful. But I have seen her go from being this young lady who was just a singer who just had a passion for singing and passion for sharing her faith through music to becoming more about the song itself. It's more about her voice, the sound that she has, her brand she has. Nothing, not to say that her music is bad. Now there are these channels on YouTube, and you'll find these all the time. They love to pick on worship music and different songs, different things like that. And I don't go down those roads. People are on their journey, and they're moving from point A to point B, and you can't stop them at any particular point and say, "Yep, you're a heretic. We're gonna stamp you with this red letter. We're going to put you in this pigeonhole. You are no longer, you wrote this song or this one line in this song they have a problem with." Now, there are some songs I do have trouble with, but I'll still do them. They're not my ready to go to songs when I'm leading worship somewhere. Because I struggle with some of the things that are said. One of the songs that I really like, until it gets to this one line, "The Reckless Love of God." I just don't believe his love is reckless. I just there's nothing reckless about his love for us. And when you're talking about something that's at the core of who he is, his love for us, and you make a statement like that, it kind of bothers me. It makes me uncomfortable to the point that I don't really want to sing that song. Relentless love of God, maybe. When I sing it, I kind of sing that. That's the word I usually stick in there. People don't really notice it when I'm doing it, typically. Now, the interesting part of all that is that there becomes this quasi culture on YouTube where they nitpick things. I see there's a guy that nitpicks people's faith and things that they teach, and he comes across as this perfect little choir boy, and it's not that, you know, that his doctrinal analysis is supposedly, you know, this perfect little world, Christian world in which we live, where it's this, you know, that things just aren't that black and white. And I like hearing his perspective. Don't get me wrong. That's not the problem. In fact, I appreciate the fact that he's got a platform and he's able to say some things that are true, and he does stand up for some things that are, you know, good and right. But at the same time, you can become very, you know, but there's a fine line between judging with righteous judgment and judgment of others. And I think that's the line that I just don't want to tread on. There was a group that I used to run around with back in the day. I wasn't going to go down this road at all, but here I go. Before I got married, there was this group that, it was right before I got married. this group that I kind of ran around with, and one of them was a college buddy. I went to Bible college, and one of them was a college buddy. The other one was a group that I ran around with before college. It was a pretty radical group. We would go out on the streets, and we would preach with a little microphone and a little speaker. And we would go on the street corners. We'd go out, downtown, wherever the kids were hanging out. We would go to the Indianapolis 500. We'd go down there. We had what we called the preaching machine. It was like a little hand truck, a little dolly. We had a battery on the bottom of it with a couple speakers that folded up and went up above the crowds, above the heads of everybody. And we'd kind of just walk down the, had a little PA system on it. We'd walk down the snake pit down there and just, there'd be a microphone on each side of this thing, and one person would start preaching, and then that person would usually get questioned or accosted or whatever, and then the other person would start preaching on the other side. We'd walk around as a group, handing out tracts and doing our thing. A lot of people didn't like it, but there were a lot of people that did. We saw some pretty powerful moments down there. And we didn't preach condemnation. There were beer bottles thrown. There were all kinds of crazy things. Things said, all kinds of things as we'd be walking by. We never got touched by a beer bottle. None of us ever got hit by a beer bottle. Frozen water bottles, beer bottles, whatever there was that they were throwing. Never got hit. None of us ever got hit with anything. And it was pretty amazing because sometimes there was a lot of them. Now, that being said, that was part of the group I was hanging out with at the time. And then there was this other, I was living with, had an apartment with a couple of these guys, and we were kind of sharing this apartment. And we happened to run into this other guy in town. It was an older guy who was kind of prophetic. He was very, very, he could read your mail. I mean, he'd pray for you, and it was like, man, this guy's, he's going to say some powerful stuff, but then at the same time, the end all message was not really clear. It was kind of difficult to swallow. But it was very tough. It was a very tough message, and he was operating out of, as I would learn later, he was operating out of bitterness and hurt that he had received from the church. And we started kind of following down this guy's, path here a little bit. And all of a sudden, one night, I remember very distinctly, it was in my room. I would, many times I would just sit there on the end of my bed and read my Bible and pray for whatever, intercede for the city, for the nation. And I would out of the blue, God just dropped this thing in my head, in my heart. And the scripture that he brought, it wasn't the scripture I was reading. It was just when Jesus said to the disciples, he said this to them. He said, this is King James. He didn't speak King James. I'm just saying, I'm quoting it in King James. You know not what manner of spirit you are of. Now, he said this to the disciples when they asked if he should call down fire from heaven. And Jesus rebuked them and said, you know not what manner of spirit you are of. This guy that we were kind of going along with and we were kind of agreeing with, was his thing was he was kind of calling down fire from heaven. He was kind of asking God to bring down judgment upon the church, upon those around them that disagreed with him. That was not. Obviously, when Jesus said that to them, he wasn't talking about his spirit. You don't know what manner of spirit you are. You don't know what the spirit is you're operating in by calling on that. Now, did God ever send down judgment in fire? Yes, he did. But that was not what this was about. This was a spirit of bitterness that he was operating in, that they were operating in. And it was interesting that this happened. And it shook my whole life. Right? From that day on, I didn't have anything to do with the guy. So I can't go down that road. Now, to this day, 40 years later, 35, 36 years later, now this guy keeps popping back into my life out of nowhere. He's moved out of the area many years ago. Someone recently approached me and said, "Hey, do you know this guy?" I said, "Yeah, I know that. I know who that is." "Well, he was in town and he mentioned your name." I said, "Wow, what in the world?" Just out of the blue, he mentioned my name. Talking to this person. And then the next thing I know, this guy is trying to friend me on Facebook. Now, maybe the guy's changed. It's been 30 years. He's been through a lot. Looking at his Facebook page. And maybe I should be friends with this guy. I don't know. But as I was looking at some of the things on his Facebook page, I realized not a whole lot has changed. I just don't feel the unction to connect with this guy right now. At this point in my life. So we'll see. We'll see how that all works out. Anyway, going down this road, I don't know. It's neither here nor there. The biggest thing I want to talk about today, I was talking about this keeping it light, and here I am going off on some kind of weird tangent. Boy, I tell you what, I did some work yesterday. I didn't go to the gym, but I feel like I've been to the gym. I feel like I've been to the gym, like a week's worth of gym in one day. I was carrying stuff, hauling stuff, doing things with muscles I haven't done for a while. And it shows this morning. Even when I go to stretch, I feel like I'm working out again because it's interesting stuff. So we have a couple things I want to talk about today. Freaky Friday, we're going to call this, because it is, this is pretty crazy stuff, actually. We have demonstrators again, and we've got, of course, it's Columbia University is the big one that everybody's talking about. They had to shut down classes, in-person classes, because of course, the Babylon Bee is having a blast with this. They're all concerned about the genocide. They keep calling this a genocide that's happening in Gaza. It's genocide, genocide, it's genocide. I don't think they understand the meaning of the word genocide. And the Jews who are on the campus there in Columbia are being told not to come into class because they're afraid of the violence that may happen against them. Now, the Jews are not committing violence against these people who are supporting Palestine or the Palestinians who are here, whatever it is. That's not what we got here. We have Jews' lives are being threatened with violence from these people who love peace so much and people who are so opposed to. Now, the Jews, I guarantee you, the Jews who are attending Columbia are not doing any killing. But this self-righteous indignation from these children who think that they're making a difference in the world by going out and doing what they're doing. Go to Gaza. You really want to be somebody, go to Gaza and do something there. Find out for yourself what's going on there. You know, there are a group of Gazans. This has been quelled by the mainstream media, by the legacy media groups out there. There was a pretty large gathering of people who were protesting Hamas. They were in Gaza protesting against Hamas. Where, have you heard about that? Is anybody talking about that? No. You're not hearing about that at all. I'm not even sure the video still exists online. I'm not even sure about it. But it was verified to be an actual video of, this is a true actual report from Gaza. So it does exist, and there are some innocent people there. There are people there who don't want Gaza there, or Hamas there, sorry. Now, having said all that, I want to get into some of this demonstration stuff. I guess Google now Google has been this bastion of, and this haven of people who are radical, wacko leftists who just continue to get wackier and wackier. They hire these people in the droves. They don't really like to hire conservatives there. They want socialists and Marxists there. Well, they're getting that. And they've got several people who are participating in some of these demonstrations. They're getting violent, and of course they get arrested or whatever happens to them, and then they get fired. Google's firing them. They're laying them off. They've laid off, I think, a couple hundred of them so far. Of course, now they're taking up, they're organizing and protesting against Google. So here's one of the things that they're doing. I'm going to play this because it's just it's just so classic. We have, of course, I'm getting all kinds of text messages now. So this is Google. Let's see if I can play this real quickly.
Google, you can't hide.
Here we go.
Google, you can't hide.
We charge you with genocide.
We charge you with genocide.
Here we go. This is, they're making a difference. Well, they're really sticking it to Google. Yeah, I'm sure Google's shaking in their boots. Because, we've been found out that we're committing genocide. We're supporting and funding genocide. Oh, no, we're being found out. Yeah, that's not what's happening at all. Now, this is how crazy people get after a while. This is Susan Sarandon, who supposedly now is, relevant, I guess. I don't know. I guess she wants to feel like she's relevant. Now, you can imagine what she's going to be like if Trump gets reelected. She's going to be back out on the street again. Her and her buddy who says, I've thought a lot about blowing up the White House. What's her name? Gaga, Lady Gaga. What's it, Lady Gaga? No. Whatever her name is. Not Lady Gaga. What's her name? I don't remember her name. It doesn't matter. But these people are getting out there. And this, of course, it's so cringe. I'm going to make you listen to it because it is so cringe. It is so ridiculous. She's just basically giving a speech. Like she's talking to people and they're repeating back everything that she's saying. They're just parroting everything. These people are such drones. They have no idea when it's appropriate and when it's not. And so let's listen to this because.
Especially in a place of education. And supposedly higher thought.
And supposedly higher thought.
To be attacked.
To be attacked.
With racism, and intolerance, is not acceptable.
It's not acceptable.
People who are old and afraid. Are looking to you. And your voices. And your organization.
And your tenacity.
And your kindness to make a difference in this situation.
Sounds like she's drunk.
You give me hope. To me and so many people. And in the end,
she doesn't look healthy, by the way.
The truth will win.
It's important at this point.
She just goes on and on. She just keeps on going. This reminds me.
Let's repeat the nonconformist oath. I promise to be different. I promise to be unique. I promise not to repeat things. things other people say.
That is Steve Martin. This is back when he was, this is the pre before the jerk. I think it was actually his, I think his actual, the movie was called The Jerk, but I think he had a, I think he had a audio comedy routine called The Jerk, I think, before that. But any, yeah. when I heard that thing with Susan Sarandon, that's what it reminded me of. It reminded me so much of the Steve Martin jerk thing, the nonconformist oath. It reminded me so much of that, that I just had to say something. I had to put that on there because I promise to be different. I promise to be unique. I promise not to repeat things other people say. I was a big fan of his back in high school, back when I was a kid. I could repeat every single line on his. I listened to his. Of course, back then it was on 8-track. I think might have been cassette, but I think it was 8-track originally. And I could repeat everything he said. I had his albums. Yeah, big fan of his. And you know what? I still am, because the guy, even though he said some things that I disagree with politically, he has, him and Martin Short have basically tried to stay out of the whole political realm. They realize how damaging it is. And they really have set themselves apart from most of Hollywood in that respect. They really, and that shows something to of their class, that they can rise above the issues that we have. And they have not been outspoken. They've not been, you know, they've kind of made fun of it in some ways, but at the same time, they're not like Dana Carvey and David Spade. Those two guys have just, they've gone, they are really, they've got a show now that some people didn't realize they're two different people. David Spade and Dana Carvey, they've got some funny stuff, and they pick on Biden up one side and down the other. Of course, now they pick on Trump too. They pick on both sides of this whole thing. But they just see the ridiculousness in the whole thing, and they hold nothing back. And they are just absolutely hilarious when they start going down the road. Now they're, of course, they're. I don't know that they're. I've not heard any clips where they're really foul mouthed at all. But it's. I'm sure that they probably are. I've only heard the funny clips that they've. I don't know, just certain things I've heard that they've talked about Biden. Biden and Trump. So that's it. They just try to stay away from this, the whole political realm, which is, I think, a classy act. I think that's a classy move. You know, for a long time, Johnny Carson could have very easily gone down the political road. He did not. He interviewed anybody. He would, you know, it was, you got the feeling he respected anybody in office. He would have interviewed anybody on his show that was in office and not given them any kind of just leftist activist kind of wackiness. And even his jokes, his political jokes, he was very, you know, he would tongue-in-cheek poke fun at things and legislation and things that were happening politically, but he would never disrespect them. And he was a class act for a long time. Now, I think he was a little bit more, possibly a little bit more conservative in his views of political events. However, he was certainly in the Hollywood sphere, and he was always respected as in Hollywood. Now, also, then Jay Leno, of course, took over after that. And David Letterman almost took over the Tonight Show. He ended up doing his own thing on another channel. And competed with the Tonight Show for a while. However, and for a while, the Letterman show was, it definitely had a following. And then it started getting more and more wacky after a while, and it became a little bit more of a, you know, and Leno kind of maintained a sense of sensibility. And was able to continue on with kind of a classier style of comedy and interviews. He seemed to be very fair, even though he had he was much more of a left leaning politically in his personal life. But I think that he's more of an open character as well. He's and I would call him a class. He has some class. He has some sense of societal ability to interact with people socially. In that respect, he respects people. Now you have this crazy, wacky late night stuff that is just all political. It's just it's another wing of the left wing, and it's just another arm of the left wing, I should say. Do wings have arms? So he had. It's just become more and more of a hack, and there's this like people like Jon Stewart and Trevor Noah, those people they're just political hacks when it comes to politics. They have no respect for half the population of this country. And then wonder why they can't get in. You're just all racist. You know, you don't like me, you're just racist. No, it's just, you're just a hack. So, having said all that, let's all repeat the nonconformist oath now, shall we? Anyway, so I just wanted to kind of nail down some of this, the craziness of the demonstrators and some of the things that they will do. Gluing your hands to a street, doing this kind of wacky, weird stuff. You know, what is the core motivation behind this stuff? That's what you have to really ask yourself is, why would someone be so compelled to do something so outlandish that you know, one, isn't going to make a difference at all? You're not going to win anyone to your side. Going out and shutting down the Golden Gate Bridge, for example, or a bridge or a street in Chicago during rush hour when people are trying to get to work or get their children from daycare or get to a doctor appointment or an ambulance trying to get somebody who's having a heart attack. You're not winning over anybody's ideals by stopping those things from happening. I'm raising awareness. They're fully aware that you're there in the street and you're in their way and in their life. This is not bringing awareness. You want to bring awareness? Go out and spend your hard-earned money. Oh, that's right. You don't have a job. That's why you can afford to be out there in the street doing nothing. Go out, be productive. Spend your hard-earned money after you pay your taxes. And take out an ad in the paper or put up a billboard or buy a sign. Or you can stand on the street corner and do your protest thing. Whatever you want to do. It's free country. But when you start taking away the rights of people to have peaceable travel, there is such a thing, and it's in the Constitution. It's called peaceable travel. That's my paraphrase of it. The right to easement, the right to travel from one place to another peaceably, and in fact, that includes being armed as well. Your Second Amendment doesn't fall off the constitutional tree when you travel on an easement from one place to another to the next, which all streets are basically easements, usually along property lines, which enables you to travel, egress. This is why school zone issues, where they say you can't have a gun within so many feet of a school zone. No, I do. I can. Yes, I can. You can't take that right away from me. I am peaceably. I'm not traveling to the school. I'm traveling on an easement through that area from point A to point B. And I have my gun with me. Because school zones and gun-free zones are some of the worst places to not have a gun to protect yourself. Just saying. So we have interesting stuff going on in our planet, in our country today. The the demonstrations are ramping up. In fact, there's people, they're interviewing some of these people doing demonstrations. And they're not even sure what they're demonstrating for. What is exactly that you're demonstrating for? Well, Gaza and genocide. Okay, can you go into any further detail? Well, I'm not really sure how to explain that. But we're going to go down and we're going to help the people down in New York City. Apparently, we're going to go down and support them. To do what? To protest. Protest what? Genocide. Okay. Okay. This is like, I think there was a city council or something in Chicago that voted. They actually had a vote on the table. They actually spent time doing this. Put a vote on the table to condemn the genocide in Gaza. Oh, and it passed. Okay. I just don't get it. I don't understand what did that do? What did that solve? Besides taking up people's time. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be cold about this whole thing. I'm just asking the question, what did that solve? What did that do? How has this changed anything in the world? You felt better about yourself? I guess now because we're in a collective society, all of Chicago now has decided that there's a genocide going on in Gaza and we condemn it. That's how all of Chicago feels because you voted for it, and that's the way we should feel now. This is an official statement from Chicago. And again, if that is the case, so what? Even if every last person in Chicago condemns what's going on, so what? I just don't, what? So what? What? So what now? How does that change anything? Collectivism has an evil, deceptive side to it, and it creeps in, and it starts to have very detrimental effects on society. And which is why I'm so vehemently opposed to collectivism of any kind, whether it's socialism, whether it's Marxism, whatever it is. It is absolutely immoral. I would like to hear more about, and we get into this whole thing of the welfare state. You want to take away welfare? No, I want to see welfare abolished by people being productive and successful. Regardless of your situation, of your status, of your abilities. No matter, I don't care if you're Forrest Gump. I don't care what your IQ is. I don't care. I want to see you be as productive in society as you can possibly be. And a lot of this falls, and frankly, it all comes back to, it falls on the church and the role that the church should have in society. And it has abdicated that responsibility to the government. That's just plain and simple. The church used to be the social safety net in a community. We would come together and help each other. It was a place where you could come and get help if you had trouble. And it was a place where people could care for those in the community who were less fortunate, if you might call it that. And it doesn't happen anymore. Now we say, well, there's a government program for that. Come here and give us your tithes so we can have a good show on Sunday morning so we can afford all the things we need to have that show and keep that show going so people keep coming back to pay more money to keep having a show until we tick you off and you leave. And we'll just have to keep getting new members that... It's a revolving door. It's just people come in, they get tired of the show, they go to some other show that has a better show, has more lights, has more smoke machines, whatever it is. Their music is louder over there. It's more whatever. We get into this trap and we start becoming very self-centered in our faith or in our worship experience. And there's many parts to it. You've got to have that closet time, that time in your closet where you have that moment, that relationship with God, and you bring that to the table. on Sunday, when we all gather together, you have that personal relationship that you bring to the table, and we all celebrate that. We all share then out of that, the abundance of that, that overspill from that. And hopefully it has something to do with sharing in our community experience, our communal experience, our koinonia as the body of Christ. I just, what can I get out of this service today? But the megachurch thing has kind of become that. There's always this little remnant within every megachurch. I've noticed that there's kind of these people who already have, they still have these principles, but they're not the ones they're gonna that organization is gonna have up front. So here we are. Here we are, folks. It's Friday. Shabbat Shalom. We're going into a weekend. This is a very busy weekend for me. I'm leading worship this evening. I've got worship practice tomorrow with a team I'm leading on Sunday. And then I go into next week. Next week is a fairly busy week. I have one thing I got to do on Wednesday that involves actual work, my previous company. One day I got to put in there, and then I get the rest of that week off, and then I get so the next couple weeks, two weeks, other than working on my boat and working on projects around the house here, I should be having shows. There should be shows again. Monday morning there'll be a show. Tuesday there'll be a show. Wednesday probably be a show. Thursday, Friday be a show. Friday's a possibility. Next week may not be a show. God bless everybody. Have a great weekend. Take care. I promise not to repeat things other people say.